College of St. Rose alum Allison Martin and Nushin Rashidian, investigative journalists and authors of a new book on the movement toward legalization of marijuana, will read from the book A New Leaf, The End of Cannabis Prohibition, as part of the 2014 Frequency North Writer Series at the College of St. Rose on Thursday, February 6th. In November 2012, voters in Colorado and Washington passed landmark measures to legalize the production and sale of cannabis for social use, a first not only in the United States but also the world. Medical cannabis is now legal in 20 states and Washington, D.C., and more than 1 million Americans have turned to it in place of conventional pharmaceuticals. Yet the federal government refuses to acknowledge these broader societal shifts and continues to raid and arrest people. 49.5% of all drug-related arrests involved the sale, manufacture, or possession of cannabis. It is a pleasure to welcome Allison Martin and Nushin Rashidian to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
So what got you on this trail of prohibition and ending prohibition when it comes to cannabis?
Well, we actually didn't realize until about a few states into our journey that we were witnessing the end of a prohibition. We actually, when we started, there were about 12 states or so that had medical cannabis. And then along the way, California had Proposition 19 on the ballot.
Right.
So when we realized that, that kind of made the book a lot more interesting.
Yeah, I came to the topic as somebody who... when I find a thread, I pull and I pull and I pull and I pull. And this topic, for anybody who covers it, is one that seems never-ending because it is. It's quickly evolving. I'm a very curious and persistent journalist. And really, for me, what it was, I'm an upstate New York native. I grew up in Firrabush.
Yep.
And I visited California and went to Venice Beach with some friends for the day. And, you know, I saw dispensaries and people using cannabis on the beach and recommendation clinics. And to me, knowing what the federal law was, I found it pretty confounding. So that was really the beginning of it for me. And I started doing a lot of research. And really, there was a lot of overlap and a lot of dissonance. And it was really that legal patchwork that ignited my curiosity.
When you specifically use the word cannabis, you don't use marijuana, you don't use pot, you want the word cannabis. And I assume that's a conscious decision, and I'm curious as to why you made that conscious decision.
Well, you know, cannabis is a plant with many names. You know, a lot of people know it by weed, pot, marijuana, ganja. There are a lot of names, and there
right.
are many more nicknames. You know, the nomenclature for me was important. I'm very interested in science. When we were dividing up the chapters, I purposely took the science and medicine chapter because I love just diving into science, and I love all of the oddities of the body and, you know, the anatomy of how we work and why we work as humans.
The cool stuff, that percolating stuff. Sure.
You know, that stuff that, I mean, for me, that's in my spare time, I you know, read this stuff.
Right.
So for me, you know, the scientists called it cannabis, so I called it cannabis.
Right. And when we kind of look down the history before the prohibition started to kind of take effect in about around 1930s, cannabis was the word. And then if you look at it on a chart, all of a sudden you see the use of marijuana spike around 1937. But it's a slang term. It's always been a slang term. It doesn't actually mean anything. Now it's taken to mean the dried flowers. And
right.
But cannabis also encompasses hemp. This is also the end of hemp prohibition as well. Hemp is starting to make a comeback. So we really felt like just saying the end of marijuana prohibition was a little narrow for the scope of the book.
Allison Martin and Nushin Rashidian are our guests. They're the authors of the new book, A New Leaf, The End of Cannabis Prohibition. When you talk about the realization that we're starting to come to a point to the end of this prohibition, what started this prohibition in the first place, that we started to develop our ideas that we have in regards to cannabis?
Well, actually, what's interesting is that up until about the 1940s, cannabis was being used as a medicine throughout the U.S. and England and Europe. It was a tincture, primarily. You know, we kind of explored this topic in the book, and we realized that states started to prohibit cannabis for anything but industrial use or medical use around 1911. And between then and about 1933, until 1934, about 33 states started to pass these sort of laws leading up to the federal prohibition. And we decided that it tied into the temperament movement a little bit, into alcohol prohibition. There really was an overlap. But the interesting thing was that by the time we decided that alcohol prohibition didn't work, we kept pushing on with this prohibition.
Right.
And so also was being tied into use by Mexican immigrants. There seemed to be a lot of racism at the time. If you read old, you know, clippings from old articles at the time, they're saying, you know, they use language like Mexican degenerates. So it seemed to be also kind of a bit of a racist movement. And racism also tied into alcohol prohibition. So if you start to look at it, it really was just a mindset of the time around the 1920s, 1930s that we've really moved away from since. But somehow this one stuck.
So Allison, as we talk about this as an issue, we're really looking at two issues, right? One is the medicinal side and the other is the legalization side. So we look at what has happened in Washington and in Colorado, which is a blanket legalization.
Right.
Very different than the medicinal uses, which we have seen in many states, as I mentioned in the introduction, including something that was a proposal in Governor Cuomo's state address here in New York State. So the question is, we look at this as two separate issues, and almost as if one is a gateway to the other.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. They are two separate issues. You know, some people do think that medical cannabis legalization is, you know, for lack of a better word, a gateway to social use or general use legalization. And in some ways it is. In many ways it isn't. Medical cannabis, which is legal in 20 states and D.C., is still very much so a patchwork. A lot of the laws don't cover the same applications, meaning, you know, patients with PTSD in some states are permitted to use cannabis for medical purposes, but not in others. Same with agitation of Alzheimer's. So there's not a lot of uniformity there. It is very different, though, than social use legalization, which, as you said, is more of a blanket legalization for anybody who's, you know, over the age of 21 and, you know, meets that requirement and brings an ID. They can, you know, go to a storefront and purchase cannabis in both Washington and Colorado.
Do those, and I just get the gauge of the room here, but do those laws in those two states seem right to you, or don't we know yet?
You know, it's what some people refer to as the grand experiment, and there's an awareness, I think, in both of the states that they are the leaders of not only the country, but the world. They're the first to legalize and regulate cannabis the way that it's happening. You know, a lot of people think about Amsterdam. Amsterdam, Netherlands, they've not regulated the way that Washington and Colorado have. And there are differences in the laws. You know, in Washington State, for example, there's steep regulation regarding driving while intoxicating, or DUI laws. There are also DUI laws in Colorado, but there are some differences. There are differences in, for example,
Home growing.
For example, in Washington State, you're not permitted to grow at home. Some people look at Colorado and think that that's a self-preservationist kind of method, where if the federal government did decide to intervene and to shut down the storefronts, Colorado residents would still be able to grow their cannabis at home.
Mm.
So it's hard for me to say, actually, whether or not, you know, the laws look right to me. I think that there are, like, one thing that I like about the Washington law is that part of the revenue earned is going to go toward research into whether or not the law worked and how the law worked and what could be changed. And the DUI regulations are an example of that. They're going to look into the DUI regulations and say, you know, if we need to tweak this a little bit, we can. So they're going to collect data.
Right. I think that looking at the process they went through, it's a really, really solid start. I definitely think that they both and the rest of the country need to be watching every step of the way into seeing, you know, how does a medical industry play into the legal industry? Do they need to be kind of folded into each other? Do they need to be separated more? Do we adjust the age limits? Do we adjust the possession limits? So all of this is, you know, things that we need to be watching as we go along. And I think other states are going to really pull lessons from them, see, you know, what has worked, what hasn't worked. You know, right now you need to get your cannabis in an opaque, child-proof packaging. Is that something that's going to stick, or is that something that we needed to do now when this is all new and eventually we're going to get over it and just package however we feel like? So it's a great effort. I mean, there's a lot of regulation, and they really followed the alcohol model. So now seemed to be the most logical model to go off of.
Many have made the comparison, and I find this to be an interesting comparison, as to the comparison to gay marriage, that state by state, little by little, you chip away. And you start here, you start there, and then 2 becomes 5, becomes 10, becomes 20, and suddenly we're talking about it as a national conversation. Do you see that happening? Because it seems, although it's been around for a long time, and although we've had these issues for a long time, that we're now sort of focused on it.
I agree. There are some comparisons there that don't work, but definitely you have this sudden sense that with gay marriage, suddenly the number of states exploded. Same thing with cannabis. The thing that I think is the most fair comparison between the two is with gay marriage, a lot of this came from this idea, I think, of somebody knowing somebody, someone in their family who was gay, somebody having a friend.
Right.
And that really helped open minds.
Absolutely.
It became personal. And that's what's actually happening with cannabis, because now it's somebody knows someone who's using it as a medicine. Somebody knows someone who lives in a state where it's down the street. So it's
or needs to use it as a medicine.
Or feels that
they need to use it. Yeah.
Correct. And so it's this thing where suddenly you've got something like 100 million people. It's like a third of the country who live in a state where there is a cannabis law, you know, and they all know somebody else. So it's just a familiarity thing. This has been around almost 2 decades. The sky hasn't fallen, and people are beginning to realize that 10 years ago still kind of new and still kind of unfamiliar. So I think that's the parallel there.
And you can't imagine a president of the United States giving an interview to New Yorker magazine and saying, you know, I don't see much of a difference between this and alcohol.
And he's sticking by it. And this is interesting. And that was very surprising even for Alice and I, because we followed the news on this.
I was surprised. Yeah.
Right. We follow the news on this so closely, and they're starting.
You know what that does? It helps book sales.
I sure hope so. And it doesn't hurt that it was in the New Yorker.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
It doesn't hurt to say the president is on your side. But right. So there's definitely a shift. He's starting to call them experiments. He's starting to say, he had another interview recently with CNN. I think it just came out today or yesterday, where he said, we need to look at these experiments.
Yeah.
So
taped yesterday or today. Yeah.
Right. So this is fascinating. And that's exactly what they are. And people who, by all means, I think there should be debate and discussion. But to some degree, it's 2 states. And the real thing is, well, let's see what happens. Let's go from there. If they fail, they fail. If they succeed, great. Or if they're kind of successful, we need to make adjustments. Great. But somebody has to do something that's different from prohibition, it seems.
Well, and we talk about this often, and we write about this in the book. You know, it's been about 40 years, about $1 trillion. And today, 4% of Americans think the war on drugs has worked. And to me, those numbers stand out. You know, as a human, as a U.S. citizen, as a journalist, those numbers to me are very stark. That's a lot of money. That's not very much support.
And if you look at the drug use or drug, I don't think it's drug addiction. I think it's drug use. If you visualize it, drug use has more or less remained stable. It's gone up and down, but it's more or less remained flat. And then if you look at it on a chart, you just see this huge spike of the money going toward trying to reduce this. So it makes you kind of ask the question, is arresting people versus offering treatment really doing what it was intended to do? And it just seems now we have millions of Americans with an arrest record and,
right.
and not any real solution.
Well, and some have argued that that is a way for municipalities to make money. They say, okay, it's sort of the wink, wink, nod, nod. There's going to be pot at this party. We'll bust these people. We'll make a couple bucks. And meanwhile, you have the other side of the coin, the arguments in Colorado and Washington saying, okay, but if we regulate it, we can make that money in the front end.
Sure. And that money is going to go toward school construction in Colorado and toward public health and education and research
right.
in Washington. And, the conversations that we've had with a lot of people across all different spectrums of, careers, socioeconomic statuses, all kinds of people, everybody just kind of says, well, we're coming out of a recession. Times are tough. There are budget gaps everywhere. I mean, from, 2007 to, today, the budget gaps in cities, states, nationally, if that ever becomes the national conversation, it seems like a pretty good way to shift the money that's spent to money that's made. That's really what we're talking about here, money that's spent versus money that's made.
And you'll really have a stronger workforce if, you don't have a bunch of people who are being shoved out of the workforce because of this record, right? You have a lot of people right now who are being pushed aside because
8 million people in the last decade.
Right. So these are people who are being cast out of the workforce.
We only have about a minute left, but I'm sure you hear this a lot of another comparison that is made, and that is to gambling, of saying, okay, we're going to open this up in our state because we want the revenue, and we realize that it's a vice. We realize people have a problem with it. We realize that there are going to be people who are going to do it properly. We realize there are people who are going to abuse it, but by the same token, this is something we have to consider for our bottom line.
Sure. And, the stats say that, one out of two people, roughly, has tried cannabis for whatever purpose. And
there's four people in this room, just for the record.
Whoever wants to raise their hand may. when you've got that kind of population, it does kind of, people start to question policy. And I think that's part of what's happening also. People want to say, we've got people who are using this. We've got people who have tried this. Maybe we should have a conversation.
Allison Martin and Nasheen Rashidian are authors of the new book, A New Leaf, The End of Cannabis Prohibition. And they're going to be reading from the book on Thursday, February 6th. That's this coming Thursday at 7:30 p.m. in the William Randolph Hearst Center for Communications and Interactive Media at the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York. You can find out more information on our website at wamc.org. WAMC.org. Again, the book is A New Leaf. Allison Martin and Nasheen Rashidian, a great pleasure to have you both aboard. And congratulations on the great work that you've done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.